Welcome to Bonding Time, the regular podcast of the Bond Dealers of America. The BDA is the only DC-based trade group exclusively focused on the U.S. bond markets. Today, we're talking with Jessica Giroux, Director of Government Affairs at the National Association of Bond Lawyers and a good friend of the BDA. Topics include municipal bonds and infrastructure, NABL's legislative priorities, creation of a NABL Government Affairs Committee, and expanding coordination of Muni advocates in D.C. and the impact on federal legislation. Now to Bonding Time with Brett Bolton of the BDA and Jessica Giroux of NABL.
Welcome to another episode of Bonding Time. I'm your host, Brett Bolton of the BDA. Today, we're pleased to have Jessica Giroux of the National Association of Bond Lawyers and a name I'm sure most of the BDA crowd is pretty familiar with. So, Jessica, it's great to have you back on another BDA event. I know this was your former stomping ground, so it's always great to have you on this type of stuff.
Thanks, Brett. It's good to be here.
So 2021, I think, at least from the BDA perspective and likely the NABL perspective, legislatively has been off to a little bit of a slow start. DC was focused mostly on stimulus, which did include some state and local funding amongst other provisions we our members may be interested in, but nothing muni related. And I pull up the news, as I'm sure you do, and I'm getting whiplash from the 4 years of the Trump administration. It's infrastructure week again. So I guess to start the conversation, is 2021 the year that infrastructure gains some traction, becomes more than just a butt of a joke, and some legislation is actually passed, or at least takes substantial steps forward towards passage?
Brett, I think for all those reasons, not the least of which is that we need Infrastructure Week to stop being the butt of the joke.
Right.
For all those reasons, I really do have high hopes that an infrastructure has a very good chance of being passed by both chambers and signed into law before the end of the year. Though I want to be able to qualify the before the end of the year comments with the following, and that is, we have a very wide ground to cover and a very narrow majority in the Senate and a narrower than last year majority in the House. So Democrats are in charge in the Senate and the House, as well as the administration. Challenges are still going to be prevalent as they always are when you're talking about a large infrastructure package. And what we're watching as the timeline goes is for President Joe Biden to unveil his longer-term economic stimulus package, which we're all watching and anticipating that it will be based significantly on infrastructure and what he was talking about on the campaign trail. And more recently, now that the stimulus bill has passed, is a Build Back Better plan. And that plan could be quite expansive. As I said, we're hearing infrastructure, we're hearing climate, we're hearing healthcare, manufacturing, supply chains, affordable housing, broadband, education, and more.
It sounds like it really runs a gamut, which is clearly needed. I know that the infrastructure report card was bumped up to a C-, which in college I've been pleased with. But I think as American infrastructure goes, we should strive a little bit better than Brett Bolton's college GPA. But we're talking infrastructure. We're talking big, broad. I don't want to get into this because it's controversial. Tax hikes to maybe cover the cost. Mm-hmm. In the same vein, I see that Speaker Nancy Pelosi, either Friday or over the weekend, announced that they're creating almost a subcommittee of chairmen of jurisdiction committees to push for Republican help and priorities, et cetera, to really stay in a bipartisan push for infrastructure. Do you feel that's possible, or do you feel that the administration and both chambers of Congress will eventually turn back to budget reconciliation so that they don't have to worry about vote counting on the Republican side as well as keeping their own members in line?
Well, I think it's possible until it's impossible, right? I think you've got some major obstacles to overcome, and you mentioned some of them being policy decisions, right? There are a lot of items to consider for inclusion. And so Democrats and Republicans right now seem to be quite far apart on just how aggressive to be on certain policy changes and how expansive the bill is going to be. Going hand in hand with that is a price tag reported to be big, upwards of $2 trillion, and I've even heard up to $4 trillion And what we're watching right now is the posturing and the positioning on the price tag. And that is, Republicans generally do not want another massive spending proposal in such short order after the most recent stimulus package that just went through Congress. You know, the U.S. has borrowed trillions of dollars in the past year to pay for coronavirus relief efforts. Some Democrats have signaled they might be willing to borrow more to finance programs such as infrastructure. But then there are Republicans and even some moderate Democrats and say the ballooning national debt is a reason to ensure the spending is offset, as you said, with tax increases or cuts. And then that leads us to that third major obstacle, which is the pay for. That's going to be the biggest hurdle. There's a lot of questions that are outstanding about how much of the bill to pay for the tax increases and which policies to finance with more borrowing. It's a lot of behind the scenes discussion, a lot of discussion about whether they're going to use federal gas tax, a lot of opposition there. Republicans don't typically want to raise taxes from what I've been hearing lately. And the president has promised not to raise taxes on individuals making less than $400,000. So they can raise certain taxes, corporate tax rates and individual rates for higher earners. There's been discussion about vehicle miles traveled tax. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is looking at that. And I say looking at it, right? That's not a plan that's been laid out for anyone to decide on right now.
We're still in the study phase, it feels like, on those, right? So I mean,
right, exactly. And even Senator Ron Wyden, the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, is talking about things like international tax plan, capital gains tax plan. But really, all of those are probably items that need to be considered, vetted, just discussed by those folks behind the scenes on the various committees and in the administration before you can take the next step and going public with what your plan is.
That can really segue us, I think, into the muni portion of this discussion. Low-cost financing options, right, for state and local governments. And 2 weeks ago now, I guess it was, in the Senate, Roger Wicker and Debbie Stabenow, a bipartisan coalition of co-sponsors with them, introduced the Local Act, which would fully reinstate advancer fundings, which I believe is probably our top legislative priority, and I believe it's up there for NABLA as well. That seems to really have some staying power on the Hill, or at least that's my read. Is that your read as well? I mean, is that a top priority for NABLA, or what else? What else are you guys looking at beyond advancer fundings that I might be missing here?
Advancer fundings are certainly a top priority for NABLA. And like you said, things look quite optimistic right now with the reintroduction of that standalone advance for funding bill. On the Senate side, we anticipate another standalone advance for funding bill will also be introduced soon. On the House side, Congressman Ruppersberger and Stivers have introduced that in the past Congress, and we believe their intention is to do that again this year. We also saw advance for funding included in the House passed Move America Forward Act of 2000, the 116th Congress.
A lot of
acronyms, a lot of numbers. And we're talking to members on the House side about other provisions that were included in HR 2, right? And that includes small borrower exception, or what we've called bank qualified bonds. In the past, another one of NABLA's priorities, introducing a new direct pay bond model.
Right.
Infrastructure bonds were introduced in the last Congress, also by Senator Wicker and Senator Bennett last year. It's the new direct pay bond model. It didn't perfectly match up with qualified infrastructure bonds, but the qualified infrastructure bonds were what was included in the House side.
Right.
And then loosening of restrictions for private activity bonds, volume cap, et cetera.
Okay, so we're pretty much on the same page there, and I think we do need to reiterate that the qualified infrastructure bond, or the American infrastructure bond, whatever we're calling it, this Congress is not affected by sequestration. I know that our members that's a big sticky point, and I know it's pretty big in the state and local government sphere as well. So that those are all good, and those are definitely, I think, all going to at least receive consideration this year. So let me take us back about 3 weeks. I had Brian Egan on from the state treasurers. And I tried to put him on the spot, Jessica, and ask him to put a percentage on what he thought, what muni priorities would actually be included in this infrastructure package, and if he thinks that the infrastructure package will become law this year. So let's start with, I don't want to put priorities in order, but I mean, what is your take? What clearly my gut tells me advancer funding is probably just because of the pure bipartisan standard they have in the early reintroduction this Congress. Do you think they have the best shot of being included in the infrastructure bill? Am I looking at this incorrectly? Are they grouped or are they separate, you know, et cetera, et cetera? What are your thoughts on how this plays out in the next 6 months?
Well, I think some of it is going to depend on which approach is the final approach that Congress decides to use. You mentioned reconciliation as an option. That's on the table again for later this year. Reconciliation would help in the sense that Democrats could run the show there, decide what their priorities are going to be, and include be as expansive as they want. They go a bipartisan approach and enlist the opinions of Republicans and try to make sure that a package can pass through with Republican and Democrat votes, then you're going to see a little bit more limitation in the policy that's going to be included, though you can do more with a bipartisan approach as well, too, in the sense that reconciliation has some limitations, policy and spending. And then you can see we're looking at potentially a hybrid approach where you split up certain programs to pursue a combination of surface transportation on the one end and an infrastructure, a larger infrastructure / climate stimulus on the other. And one of those could go bipartisan and the other one could go using reconciliation. And then we really see where the priorities that we care about, the ones that we just discussed, where do they fall?
Right.
They fall at reconciliation. There's potentially some limitations to how far out spending can go outside of the 10-year window. Advancer fundings really has been the top priority for issuers. You and I are on the Public Finance Network calls once a week where we discuss what's happening in Congress. You know, we hear from the Government Finance Officers Association how valuable a tool advancer funding is, but in particular, how valuable it really could have been over the past year if advancer fundings were available, tax-exempt advancer fundings were available for issuers to use over the past year. There could have been some cost savings there. I didn't answer your question.
No,
about percentages.
I get that I'm putting you on the spot here again, and I'm striking out yet again. But I mean, but to me, I've always said that there was a chance it would happen this year. But to be frank, up until about the past 10 days, I was somewhat pessimistic on the prospects of something big being passed. But it truly does seem like it is gaining vast quantities of momentum in a short period of time, which it's changing my mind fairly rapidly. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, well, it's March already, and I don't know how that happened, right?
But I woke up and it's March, middle of March.
Soon it's going to be June and then July, and
right.
Time seems to fly. So here's what I'm looking at. We think that the White House is going to come out with something in April. The administration is going to make a nice nationwide push to sell its COVID relief package over the next couple of weeks, and then in April, really going to focus on their priorities for infrastructure next. We're already hearing chatter that on the Senate side, the Environment and Public Works Committee, and on the House side, Transportation and Infrastructure Committee hope to pass a bill out of their committees by May. May brings us into the summer where there's going to be a lot of debate about sort of what policies will and will not work, and then what approach they're going to use. And I think with the reconciliation tool that we will see something by the end of the year. There's a higher hope that if we didn't have reconciliation as an option, there's a higher hope with reconciliation that Democrats can cut their losses at some point if they have to right. Go it alone on reconciliation. So, and then I mentioned how fast time passes. You know, we're going to be in September, October again before in a surface transportation. That reauthorization extension has to either be extended again or the surface transportation package has to be reauthorized. Those are sometimes, they can be really good deadlines to be up against in order to sort of make Congress more aware of the work that needs to be done in short order. But also right. Midterm elections are going to come up.
Golly, man, we just got through 2020 elections. And the after events, let's not revisit elections anytime soon.
Those are the political factors that play into it as well, too.
Right. And that's good. Thank you for mentioning the surface transportation backstop, we'll call it September. I do think the timeline that the chairman are painting right now is a tad rosy, the May Memorial Day timeline and summer passage. But I think that having the September backstop really does help push. Mm-hmm. I think you're spot on there. So thanks for taking your best go there and putting a percentage. We'll say it's 100% from Jessica at NAPL. And if it's incorrect, then we can always revisit this at a later date in 2022.
Right, let's do that.
Okay, so I'm sure some of our members are aware, but recently, how long have you been at NAPL? 3 years? I guess I've been at BDA 3 years. Yeah. You created a government affairs committee, correct? Can you explain a little backstory on that? How's it going? How big is it? Is it continuously growing? And what exactly have you guys been working on?
Certainly, yeah. So governmental affairs committee is about two and a half years old. We created it as a result of the advocacy efforts that we had taken on, the additional advocacy efforts that we took on as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We felt that there was a need for us to be on the Hill even more than we'd ever been in the past, and then also to engage our membership even more. Whereas in the past, we had brought our board of directors to Capitol Hill every year and had one-off meetings where necessary. We wanted to be a little bit more strategic about involving our members and being able to be on the spot when Congress needs information or needs feedback. And so the Governmental Affairs Committee was created. And what we did is we bolstered our website with new information, easy to find one-pagers on a variety of topics. We created a toolkit, an advocacy toolkit for our members to use. We put together templates for certain requests that we had asked our members to make of their members, their representatives in Congress. And then one really big initiative that's worked out quite well for us is we undertook a home zip code collection on your NAPL member profile.
It's ginormous, correct? I mean, thousands, right?
Yeah. When you fill out your NAPL member profile, we ask you for your home zip code so that we can specifically target where you live. And we use that information when there's a need for us to have targeted outreach. For example, when Senator Wicker was introducing or about to introduce the Advance for Funding Reinstatement Bill in 2020, we were able to reach out to our members, and not only his state, but states nearby. And then others who were targets of Mr. Wicker on the Senate Finance Committee and who we think would be supportive of Advance for Funding, and ask our members to reach out as constituents. We would tell them who their representative is. If we're on the House side, we'd tell them that who their senator is, what we're supporting, why we're supporting it, what's the number of the bill if we had it, and why it's important, and then leave an opportunity for them to include a little personal story or an anecdote. And so we were easily able to deploy our members with specific asks, and we have that information now so that when we need to pivot and make a quick request of our members down the line, we can use it. And it's been extremely helpful and useful advocacy tool.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, kudos to you. You've done a hell of a great job setting up the committee here. And the NAPL advocacy has grown so much in the past 2+ years. It's been pretty incredible to watch from our perspective. So you got the newish government affairs committee. What other NAPL initiative events should our members know of in the next couple months? Anything big coming up that really pops to mind there?
So we've got conferences that we hold every year. So and I don't want to get into those in too deep because their information's right out on our website. But speaking of our website, we had created last year, and it's still live right now, a COVID-19 webpage where we've included all of NAPL's communications to Congress and the administration, anything COVID-19 related, anything that BDA did, that CIFMA did, that GFOA did, that NAS.
Okay.
We threw up all the industry updates too. We have an up-to-date news articles, and let our members know what's being said in Congress, what's being said in the news, what our industry partners are doing. And then we also include that in a weekly wrap, which we send to our members. We have a community where NAPL members can send messages to each other on our website called NAPL Connect. So we can share information, not only about advocacy efforts, but of what's going on in our other committees. And the committees that we have on there are tax, securities law, general practice, issuers council, solo practitioners, and small firms. So our members can connect on a variety of topics. But more recently, what we've started to do is hold Zoom meetings with certain NABL members from a state, right? I'll choose Alabama, which was our first Zoom meeting. We invited the entire Alabama congressional delegation to meet with all of NABL Alabama members. And we talked about all the issues that you and I discussed earlier, all of our advocacy priority issues. And we'll have our third congressional delegation meeting coming up next week. So we're going to continue to do that, to meet with, to get NABL members in front of, even if virtual, their representatives in Congress to talk about all of these issues.
That's awesome. Yeah, we were talking about virtual versus in person. And I don't know how much longer this is going to go, but I'm really craving the Miller Lite and cheese plate that Fun mm-hmm. have on Capitol Hill. We're hosting Chairman Neal next week. And while it's great to have them online, it's just so much better in person. So here's to hoping that we can start doing these coalition meetings in person at a date that is relatively soon.
Yeah, I think everyone's on the same plate as you. We want to get back to a little bit more of our new normal, whatever that may be. But I think that does include in-person meetings again and coffees, maybe closer than 6 feet apart.
I hope so. I think so. I'd love to have our members back in town, as I'm sure you and NABL would too. So we'll cut it off there. Jessica, thank you so much. It's great to have you back on a BDA platform here. I hope this is the first of many coming up in the near future, and we really appreciate what you do.
You got it. Thanks so much, Brett.